What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today I'm talking to Sarah and Beth from Pantsuit Politics. Now, if you're not a listener to Pantsuit Politics, you need to start, especially with this upcoming election season and just kind of the madness going on in the country in general right now. This is a great podcast to go to. Sarah and Beth are so good at sort of breaking down what's going on, making it understandable, making it digestible for people who are outside of that. And I think as a average American, you know, that doesn't do all of this political stuff every day, it can be so hard to keep up. You're like, I'm just trying to keep my children alive during a pandemic. I don't have time to, you know, stay up on everything going on in the news and stay up on all the what's going on in politics and all of that stuff, and educate myself on the history of a lot of these issues going on right now. So Sarah and Beth do that for you. They have just an amazing perspective. They have history and in politics. And so, yeah, this is just a great show. And we delve into a lot of what I wanted to talk to them about was why Christians should be involved in politics. Cause for me, it can be easy to be on the sort of outside. Like, I'm just over here doing my Christian thing. Don't necessarily have to worry about it, but we have like a really robust conversation about what's going on in the political sphere and then why we need to be engaged. And so I think you're going to get a lot out of it. They are awesome. Super funny. This is a great episode. We do just jump straight into it. We had some recording issues kind of getting in. We were in a rush. So the episode just starts. There's not a lot of intro time or whatever. You get a little bit about what the history of the podcast, but then the rest of it is just getting after it with questions and some awesome discussion. So can't wait for you to check it out. Before we get to the interview, though, make sure you are following me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle and on Twitter at Curry Blanford to stay up to date with what's going on the podcast. I have some new media sort of in the hopper right now ready for you that's still taking shape. So you're going to want to know about that when it comes out. So make sure you're following me, staying up to date. And yeah, I hope you really enjoy hearing from Sarah and Beth.
Beth said, would you ever want a guest post? And I said, absolutely. And she wrote a post called Nuance, which has really become sort of the North Star of the Pantsuit Politics world. And she said, basically, you know, we were so cute in 2015. We were arguing about things like Cecil the Lion, and we thought things were intense. It was really, we were adorable. Just like America as a whole was adorable. And so we said, you know, her sort of point was, you don't have to assume everything about me because of one post. Like, I'm a nuanced person. This is a nuanced position. And it was really well received. And my husband had been openly harassing me to start a podcast. And so I said, would you ever be interested in starting a podcast? And she said, what's a podcast? And I said, don't worry, we will figure that part out. And we did. We figured it out. I mean, I think it's hilarious, insane, intense, bananas to think about that. In 2015, we sat down and we're like, let's just talk across the aisle. It'll be so cute.
Right.
We thought nobody would listen. We thought, like, basically, we really enjoy talking to each other. The first time we got on the phone to talk politics, we talked for 45 minutes. I had a baby sleeping in the back of my car. I was just driving around my hometown in a loop. And I said, we're not going to do this anymore unless we're recording it. Because it was really evident that, you know, we have a very complimentary styles and conversation and personalities. And it flowed really well. And, you know, then the 2016 election happened and that changed everything. And, you know, the politics and our political environment continues to shift and intensify. And all I know is that in the middle of that intensity, just sitting down to talk to Beth about what's going on in our world has like made me a better person, a less stressed person, a less anxious person. And I'm just glad other people want to listen along.
Yeah, that's awesome. But that's an awesome story, because the origin of the podcast, right, was that you take somebody sort of more conservative and somebody progressive, and you sort of have a conversation between the two. Is that right?
Yeah, we never intended to do crossfire. In fact, our intention from the beginning was, hey, this shouldn't sound so polarized. We should be able to chat with each other. It has certainly evolved because the landscape has changed, and I've changed my party registration since we've started, because from the beginning, we have wanted not to be pundits or representatives of each party as much as coming to politics with the entirety of who we are. So when I sit down, I don't want to just be Beth, a former Republican, now Democrat. I want to be mom, sister, friend, all the things that I am in my life. And so I think we've had a different posturing than what people are accustomed to in the political space from day one. And it has definitely evolved over the almost 5 years that we've been doing this.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. I love that. I mean, to be honest with you, both of you like started a podcast, even though you weren't sure what it was. You started one like at a perfect time to like already be rolling when 2016 hit. I mean, kudos. That's good work.
I often say that, you know, I was in the mommy blog space beforehand and I suffered from bad timing and the lack of an elevator pitch that really succinctly summed up what I was trying to do. People were often confused because of aforementioned shift from Stroller Review to Syrian Civil War. And so this endeavor has really been a combination, I think, of a lot of things. One was really good timing and a desire to, you know, we have an elevator pitch. We did in the beginning. I don't know if I need to keep that as part of the story because as we've shifted and changed, it's clearly that we had more going on than just sort of a bipartisan thing because we're not bipartisan anymore. Some people are still upset about that. That's okay. The podcast is free. They don't have to listen. But I think that the idea that, it's some of it is timing and some of it is pushing back when people tell you, oh, the market doesn't want this. They want Crossfire and say, no, I think that some part of the market does need this and want this and just trusting your own instincts.
Yeah. Well, here's what I've been thinking a lot about this because I was talking earlier just about how like, I don't like politics isn't my thing. And I think a lot of people say that, but as I look at my education, you know, like I'm a pastor, right? So I have like way too much education for like what I get paid basically, but the last time I was educated by somebody else really politically, like in a classroom, was my senior year of high school. And I'm 37 now, you know what I mean? And so I think for Christians, I've gone through Bible college and, you know, grad school. I never once had somebody sort of discipling me in the realm of politics, right? The discipleship, I think, for most Christians comes from either Fox News or for some of them, CNN, I guess. But like the media outlets are what are discipling us in politics, right?
I've never that's thought about what we do to put it. Discipleship, but I love that, don't you, Beth?
Yeah, that's
I think it is. It. Yeah.
And I think it's true. And I think that naming it that way is really powerful because that is what's happening. I mean, we were just talking about how, yes, America has always had partisan division, and that division has gotten very intense at different times. What's new is that we almost have an IV drip of that discipleship in terms of how we're supposed to feel about it happening 24/7. And that changes our ability to problem solve through that division.
Right. Totally. And it lacks nuance, right? Which is what I think y'all bring to the table in a lot of ways is, hey, you know, quit like media is meant to have quick hits, right? Like let's get ratings. Let's make it as quick as possible that you get the information or whatever. But it lacks such nuance to what's actually happening by somebody who's actually educated to talk about it.
Well, I think that, you know, why I kind of like discipleship too, as an example, is I don't want it to be a hierarchy. Part of the reason that we started the podcast is because I felt like what I heard about particularly my female friends is like they didn't feel safe engaging with these things, particularly around men, but even among other women. There's an enormous amount of pressure to make people comfortable, an enormous amount of pressure to kill any conflict that might arise in the conversation. And, you know, politics is often filled with conflict, although I don't think it has to be. And so I like the idea of like, we're just coming alongside people and we learn from our audience as much as they learn from us.
Right.
And, you know, what we always say is like, you don't need to be an expert. You are a citizen. You are an essential part of this process. And I think that the pressure to be an expert, the pressure to never get anything wrong because the stakes are so high, the feeling that you can't just say, I don't know. Just releasing people to say, I don't know about this. I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know enough about this. Or I feel like I'm really tied up emotionally in this subject and I might need some time to calm down or, you know, whatever the case may be. I just, that pressure to be an expert and that sort of hierarchical system that we've set up around politics is really damaging, I think, to the discourse.
Yeah, for sure. Well, because nobody wants to be wrong, right? I mean, it's the reason we hold the opinions that we do, because we think we're right about them, and changing those things is hard. It really is.
You don't have to be wrong if you can say, I don't know, though.
Right.
We need so much more I don't know in our politics, probably in our faith, too.
I was going to say, yes.
You know, but being able to acknowledge, I don't have a complete understanding of the factors that go into whether we ought to sign a trade agreement with China.
Right.
And that's okay, because I'm living a very full life here and doing my best. And so I do need some people I can trust to walk me through that. And I need to do some research myself, maybe. But I can still participate in a very informed way and from a very grounded place without having all those details. I think the big problem is that we've outsourced all of our I don't knows to just, well, I'm with this team, not that one. And that has harmed our ability to participate thoughtfully. And it's harmed our ability to attach that participation to something more grounded than just, I'm on this team.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember recently y'all talking about parties, right? And parties gets really tricky. Like, even there were experts on your show sort of debating whether parties were like supposed to be part of the original, you know, sort of constitution, the founding fathers. And in some ways, parties are super helpful because they sort of like, you don't have to do as much research, you know, like necessarily, because you kind of know what these people are going to be about in some ways. But in other ways, haven't they like made us not be informed because we think we can just like check boxes?
Yeah. You know, I just waxed poetically about how we don't need to be experts. Please do not misinterpret that to mean that I don't depend on experts and that we all shouldn't depend on experts, because we absolutely should. There are experts in constitutional law. There are experts in QAnon. There are experts in healthcare and education, and we should lean on that expertise. And we should trust that at certain points we have to make a decision based on data and not just who can scream the loudest.
Right.
And, you know, right now, I think in the middle of this pandemic, I was listening to This American Life, and they were talking about public education and how the federal government kicked it to the state government kicked it to the local government kicked it to the school boards, and the school boards left it up to the parents. And I think you're just feeling this like, no. Where are the experts telling us what to do? I need an expert to tell me what to do. Because the idea, I think the most dangerous thing about our current time and what's really different from times past is the idea that we can get on Google and figure it out ourselves.
Right.
And that is not accurate. Epidemiologists spend years in educational systems learning about viruses. We are not going to figure out the truth about viruses or vaccines in 30 minutes on YouTube. It's not happening. That doesn't mean you shouldn't stay informed. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't listen to experts and listen to a lot of experts and maybe listen to experts that have some debate or disagreement. But the idea that we can just sit down by ourselves behind a computer screen and figure it all out, I think, is really damaging. We need to be in community with each other. We need to listen to expertise to sort of move forward on these problems.
Yeah, I totally agree.
What's true for me that I'm learning through this conversation is that I have such an unhealthy relationship with authority. I don't like it for the most part, but I only understand it in a very rigid sense. And I think that's been the problem with the intersection of politics and expertise for a while, because a lot of us don't like authority and have an instinct to reject it or to see it as all-knowing and definitive. Mm-hmm. And nothing can go wrong when we rely on authority. And if it does, then it wasn't a real authority. And we're living through a time right now that illustrates experts can disagree. Experts can be experts and still not be able to predict the future. Experts still have to run experiments sometimes. And I think that a healthier level of political participation for all of us is recognizing there are places I can go to get really good information, but none of it's dispositive because we are always in the midst of a great experiment as a democracy. as people just trying to live in community with one another. You know, our history is that empires fall. So we're always in the midst of a process that no one can completely understand. And that gives me more permission to not understand it completely and still participate. And it also helps me listen to other people through a more realistic filter.
Yeah, I think that's helpful. I was just thinking about, I mean, y'all have done a lot with QAnon and some of the, the conspiracy theories coming out are maybe I just never paid attention before or something, but like, it seems like it's to a different level than I've ever experienced in my lifetime. And I just think, I don't know. I want to be like, hey, just stop doing that. That's dumb. But at the same time, I think there's a real sense out there that people are like afraid and they don't feel like anybody's actually like telling them the truth. You know what I mean? And in some ways it feels more reasonable to believe something crazy over some of these failed institutions that we've seen not be trustworthy, right? Does that make sense?
It does. I think it is a beautiful thing, and I think you do this instinctively because you're a pastor, to say what need is not being met that this is filling.
Yeah.
And I think there are a bunch of unmet needs that this is filling, and I think that's why it's proliferating so significantly. There is a real source of connection to other people when you buy into a conspiracy theory. Now you're part of a group. It has an identity. It's on a mission together. You're trying to accomplish something together. Where do you feel those things otherwise in our politics or even really socially right now, especially as we've had to physically distance from each other more? So as much as I lament that we're filling the vacuum with the garbage that we're filling it with, I want to be attentive to the vacuum.
Yeah. So how do you talk to people then about healthy directions to healthy places to go for information and staying away from unhealthy ones, I guess?
We leaned a lot recently on a wonderful sermon we heard from Jen Hatmaker at Evolving Faith, where she said, just look at the fruits. Look at the fruits. When you're connecting to other people, if you are feeling self-righteous and angry or fearful and scared and ready even to take violent action, or you're supporting violent action against your fellow citizens, then let's take a beat and look at the fruits of what we're engaging with. If you're talking about your fellow citizens as human garbage, if you're ready and willing to cut the country in half, then let's think about that. Let's think about the fruits of how we're engaging with one another, because we live in a community and we need one another. And so I think when you feel that connection, making you hopeful, making you feel heard and seen in a healthy way, that doesn't feed your worst instincts, that's good fruit to pay attention to. And I would hope that people of faith sort of have that awareness, have that skill, and can look to those fruits.
That's good. It's almost like Jesus kind of said something like that. Like,
right?
you know them by the
fruit. I think so.
It is crazy. It's amazing though. We take like a gospel, like love God and love others, and we turn it into those people are idiots and they should leave our country, or, you know what I mean? Just, it's hard for me to grasp the jump that one has to make in order to get to that point, you know, where it is like burn them down, that all Democrats are unsaved or something, you know. It's just and it works both ways. Again, I know y'all have to like balance some of this stuff, you know, when you talk about it, because there's no one side that's sort of like all bad, and there's no one side that's all good, you know. So
I don't like the slippery slope fallacy, but we are doing it a lot right now. You know, an understanding that there is bias in news reporting. Of course there is. Human beings report the news and we want it that way. Some bias is actually just prioritization, which we need more of. Deciding what stories get told has always been part of the news. But we've taken that and decided, well, that means I can't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. No, you can trust people. There's a lot on the line for news organizations. Their credibility is all they have. And so when people ask us, where do you get your news? I'm like, where do I get my news? From NBC and ABC and CNN and, you know, the New York Times and places that have a lot invested in telling it correctly. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't occasionally read one of their stories and think, there's something that feels a little off to me here. or I want to get another opinion on this, or I want to get five more opinions on this because I really want to understand what happened and what has been prioritized in the telling. That's healthy. It is not healthy to walk around believing that everyone in media is lying to you. And if you start there, of course you're going to gravitate to random dude on the internet who won't even tell you his name, finding meaning in the most bizarre symbols attached to tweets. Like, I just feel like there's such a disconnect in the worldview of, I don't trust this, but I'll trust that. And we really need to talk more about where that came from.
So I shouldn't be getting all my news from Twitter, is what you're saying?
It's bad. Don't do that.
I'd like you to not do that, please.
Yeah. Okay. Don't do that. Algorithm.
Personal favor.
Okay, I got to write that down or something.
You know, it's like, if you want to talk about who we shouldn't trust or what we shouldn't trust, algorithms. Algorithms are not trustworthy. They feed fear and drama and anger, and they are competing for the very valuable minutes of your life in order to turn a profit. So if you want to talk about something not to trust, that's a really good place to start.
I didn't realize I was on such an anti-algorithm show here. So
Well, you know what, though? It's amazing when you say that, because the thing is, the bias is preferable to that automated manipulation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we need to recognize that those are our choices.
Yeah. I wonder, too, have we just, like, forgotten how to think critically about most anything? I mean, it seems like, where did all that sort of, I guess, go wrong? Like you said, like, I read a news story and it seemed a little off, so I went somewhere else and read another news story. Like, that's critical thinking skills that I feel like may not come to the foreground of, like, the way we process information all of the time.
Can I get a little radical with you for a minute?
I love radical.
Okay, good. I don't think capitalism rewards analysis. I don't think capitalism rewards critical thinking. Capitalism is built on emotion. I feel sad, I buy this, I feel happy. And capitalism and our particular structure perpetuates a lot of income inequality, which puts people in stressful situations where critical thinking is not available to them, because they are spending a majority of their brain power and life force and energy keeping themselves afloat. And so I think that, you know, that those two forms of input from our current economic system can really lead us down a path to where we are right now. And that's not to say, because I already hear people, oh, she's a Democrat, she's the socialist. Beth has been really good lately being like, hi, everybody. We already have a socialist / capitalistic system. We have socialistic aspects of our economy already currently in place. You pay into Social Security. It's right there in the name, social. But I do think, like, you know, I think it's probably more palatable if I describe it as consumerism, and I'm happy to do that. But that consumer mentality, there's not a lot of critical thinking for a consumer environment to function and flourish, right? It's just spend, be happy, spend, solve your problems.
Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing a different way, because I do think capitalism is preferable to other systems, even with all of its flaws. But I think that what I would say about at least people of my age group, so I'm 39, what I have been rewarded for in my life is not critical thinking. It is consumer behavior. It is saying, I like this or I don't. I would recommend this or I wouldn't. 5 stars or 3 stars. That is the behavior that I have practiced more than critical thinking, because I have endless opportunities to practice, I like this or I don't. And I have very few opportunities to say, I wonder what I'm missing. I wonder what's not in front of me. I wonder where else I need to be looking or who else I need to be talking to. Everything when you're doing that sort of consumer behavior, you're in a closed environment, right? I had the hamburger, it was good or it wasn't. And that's really different from how do we solve the problem of food insecurity? Whose voices need to be included in that discussion? What even matters when we look at data? It's a totally different skill set, and one that we're not putting in front of each other very often.
I think that's I think that's a really helpful way to think about it. I mean, critical thinking takes time as well. And we are the most over busy people who have maybe ever existed on this planet, you know? And so I think capitalism feeds into that. And yeah, I think that's really helpful ways to think about stuff. I'm finding myself critically thinking even as we're sitting here. So
good work.
Okay. That's great stuff. There was so much on capitalism that I wanted to go back to.
Really lobbed that one on you without warning.
Well, I do wish people understood that we don't live in a true free market, right? Like a free market would run amok. It reminds me of that Jeff Bezos graphic that y'all put out, like
where you scroll.
And scroll
for 15 minutes and you don't get the end of his wealth. Yeah, I'm still haunted by it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I've said that to everybody I know. I'm like, you have got to understand this. I mean, Beyonce's like on there and she's like a blip on the Bezos screen.
Well, that's because it's like, you know, rich becomes this one group and I want to be in that group. So I'm not going to go after that group. And it's just, it's really, really hard to convey to people like that's not a group. That's a different galaxy.
Right.
Jeff Bezos' wealth is a different galaxy. It is something that the average American literally has no concept. You know, I am very blessed and very privileged in my life. And I've lived most of my life, I would say, in the upper middle class. And a very few times during experiences in law school and during experiences in DC, I got to peek just right over the fence at what that level, and not really, honestly, not even that level of wealth. People like whose wealth Jeff Bezos would weep if he woke up with tomorrow. And it was just mind-blowing. It's really, really hard to convey. Let me tell you something. It ain't Real Housewives, okay? Like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people who wouldn't go on a reality show if their life depended on it, right? Because they have so much wealth. And, you know, I just think we need to ask ourselves, like, are we okay with that? Do we want that galaxy? Do we think it is moral and ethical for that galaxy to exist? You know, that doesn't mean eat the rich. It just means let's have conversations about this. Let's think through the moral and ethical implications of these things instead of just fighting about it.
Yeah.
Well, and saying to ourselves, is a world in which there is a Jeff Bezos galaxy actually a free market?
Mm-hmm.
It's not. If you say, as I have, to define my political views for my entire life, that I value competition, right, and I value small business, and I value lots of people getting a shot at home ownership and retirement and great education. We can't have that on a big scale when we are so divided into the ultra super rich and everybody else. And so what adjustments do we want to make? That doesn't mean we have to say, all right, well, full on communist Russia circa 1940 is what we want to do here. There's a lot of space between where we are today and there, but we can recognize, gosh, do you see as many small businesses today as you did 50 years ago?
Right.
No, why not? Let's talk about antitrust enforcement. Let's talk about the rules of the game that allow us to do capitalism in a healthy way when we actually live what we say we mean as we talk about capitalism. That's very different than saying, I'm going to throw all of our values out the window.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, I keep saying to people, didn't we used to break up monopolies? This used to be a thing. And I know we always do it as soon as we should have, but like, I don't understand what's happening.
I mean, I think that what happened, honestly, is, well, Ronald Reagan, this is another podcast. But I mean, I think we decided that government was always the problem. And we have erased the part of history, particularly in the mid 20th century, where government actively had its hands on the scales to create a middle class and to support people, to protect them from monopolies, to protect industries, to protect rural America,
right,
putting airports and price fixing or price placements, you know, like that. This was a comprehensive economic policy that said there is a role for government in protecting the interest of the majority of people versus the interest of a wealthy and powerful few. And like, we just decided that less government, that's the only thing that will fix every problem America has, is less government. Well, I think we're living amongst that, particularly with the pandemic. How do we like it when everybody, when the government steps out of their room? I don't dig it personally. I'm willing to have a conversation for those who do and where they think that's important. And that's something Beth and I do a lot, is I'm way more interested in an active role of the federal government. And she always says, like, we're in a car, and I'm the gas on the federal government and she's the brakes. And so, like, but you got to have both to drive a car. And I do want people in the room that are like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't want people in the room that tell me, because I want the government to play a role in protecting the interest of the middle class, that I hate America. I want those people to exit the room and go to a yoga retreat. But people who want to have a real conversation about this, about the role of government and how we can balance these interests, I'm all up for it. I'm happy to do that.
I think another thing that happened is that we decided we're done. Mm-hmm. We have the rules. We have the structure. We got a real good thing going here, and we're done. And the monopolies that we have today did not exist when we wrote the laws for breaking up monopolies. And we have to think really differently about, is Amazon a monopoly? They're selling a lot of different things through a lot of different channels. That wealth is being acquired in very different ways. How do we process that? How do we regulate that? What do we do with Facebook and Twitter? We don't have a rubric, and we have to make the kinds of decisions that people made much earlier on in our country than today. And instead of seeing that as an exciting challenge, we just kind of say, well, I'm either for it or against it in terms of regulation. That's not a healthy place for us to be.
Yeah, I think that's good. That's helpful stuff. I was telling Beth earlier in the, when we were talking, I've been like reading some political theory and Christian critiques of political theory, and I never understood that, like liberalism from like a, I don't mean like, you know, conservative, like Republican, Democrat. I mean, liberalism as a political theory, that, is about the individual. And that's not how like everybody's lived for like all of eternity. And I think, you know, so progressives come at this from one angle, and conservatives, Republicans in this country, come at that from a different angle. They're fighting for the same thing, just in very different ways. And I think if people could sort of wrap their minds around that, I think a lot of these conversations would be easier. There's a shared philosophy here somewhere, some nugget of that, I guess.
Yeah, and it's a matter of degrees, and we're not good at that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot more that we could, yeah, come together on than disagree on. And yeah. And the wealthy are just telling us what to do.
we don't define the debate.
Yeah, right.
You know, we do. You're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you're right. Progressive or you're liberal, and you're opposed. And that's the only thing that matters. And, you know, we don't define the debate. And I think we tend towards the binary. I think that we want things to be right or wrong, good or evil, black and white. Let me just lob another bomb into your podcast. We want it to be choice or life,
right.
Pro-life, anti-life, yeah. Yeah. Like life is a light switch. And I think that, that it's not serving us. We don't, like Beth said, we don't do degrees, and life is lived in degrees. And, you know, I think especially as people of faith, you know, one of my favorite phrases is the gospel of sin management. Like the Bible's just like a math book, and we're just going to open it up and get the right formula. And then you just plug it in, your behavior and God's decision on that. And then we'll just go back. And man, that is not awesome. I do not love that approach. It has not served me in my life. It has not served my friends and their lives. And I think a gospel based on love and connection, where we are one and we are trying to get closer to that, and we're not so consumed with our individual path to heaven and more consumed about the connection that God called us to see between and amongst each other. To me, like if we can let that value inform us instead of this good, evil, black, white situation, we would get unstuck, because we're just so stuck in so many areas.
Hmm. And I think Amen. The introduction of more philosophy to that conversation is really needed. To me, our failures in the face of coronavirus have really been failures to bring philosophy into the room, because there isn't a right and wrong way to handle a pandemic. It is more, what is our ethical framework? What do we prioritize in terms of people's health and welfare? Those are big philosophical questions.
Yeah.
Are you better off not contracting a virus or losing your home or whatever, right? Whatever. Those are big, hard questions. And I think people who gravitate toward a legalistic approach, whether that is to their faith, that gospel of sin management that Sarah was talking about, or to their politics, are doing that because they want to be principled. Mm-hmm. And I want to be principled. But my understanding of what is principled has been influenced by looking at philosophy and realizing that every principle is built more of questions than of answers.
Right.
And what causes you to be principled is what questions are you asking so that you can apply those principles to an infinite number of situations with some amount of success. And I think that's where we're really stuck right now.
Hmm. Yeah, you're totally right. And again, that's a conversation that it requires nuance and it requires critical thinking. And
And it requires grace for yourself and for yeah, other people.
Right, right. Amen.
It requires a lot of grace that you can give without receiving.
Yeah.
Y'all, people of faith should be able to do that.
I totally agree. Amen. I just want to clap. Is that all right?
I do praise hands inside my recording studio all the time.
I love it. I love it. We need more amens and praise hands in our lives, I think, is the takeaway here. Okay. I want to talk about citizenship. And like I listened to y'all's series on citizenship. I found it really helpful and well thought out. And I want to jump off into citizenship like this. Okay. So back to my issue, like not being discipled politically. I think there's this sense that I've always sort of fallen into, which is sort of the I'm a citizen of heaven, right? I mean, that's like a very common evangelical thing, like way to think, right? Like this is not my home, you know, this world. So y'all bring into this a conversation about being a citizen and the obligation of citizens. How do we as Christians think about citizenship in America? Sorry, that might be too broad.
No, I think that's a fun question. I mean, I think all of these questions are fun questions because they really get at what's the point of anything. Right. And I think that we would not be placed on earth were we meant to be only citizens of heaven.
Sure.
I think we are here for a reason. And so when I think about what it means to be a citizen of America or a citizen of this planet, I try to think through how does this connect to my faith? And what does my faith counsel me to do here? And nothing in my faith counsels me to be in an endless race to the absolute bottom of two polarized ideologies. My faith counsels me to greater connection with everything that God has created. And so how do I live out my obligations here while I'm on earth, coming into greater connection with everything that God has created? That is, to me, a much more life-giving way to approach politics than most of what we're offered.
Yeah.
And I just don't think it has to be exclusive. I think we would not be here were we not meant to be citizens of multiple places at one time.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I think citizenship is a community act. That's what we really, really tried to push in our series, is that we are not citizens because we do lots of Google research and then post on Facebook. Like, that's not the vision of citizenship literally anyone really wants for the future of our country or for like their kids. Like, I don't want my kid as an adult feeling like he's a good progressive because he reads The Atlantic and posts about it on Facebook. Like, I really want a deeper version of that for him. Although I would prefer that he read The Atlantic. I think that, you know, I want connection for him. I want him to feel the joy and gratitude and just swell of love for his fellow humans when you work towards something and you make progress and you see something happen, not because you're awesome, but because you found these people that you realized you weren't alone and you could do more together than you could apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I want for him and that's what I want for myself. And I think realizing that citizenship, that voting is a neighborly act, that engaging in our local communities is the best way to try to solve our problems. And that, you know, these we've kind of found this, again, consumerism version of citizenship where we donate and we vote and maybe we phone bank occasionally. And I think, like, I just want to see a more complex, deeper, engaged version of that. When our listeners say, I went to my first school board meeting, or I found this group of moms in my community and we didn't like the way this was going and we went to the city commission and we fought and we won. Like, that makes me feel so grateful and so joyful and so like, we're doing it. Like, we're doing it. And even, you know, it doesn't even have to be that sort of pragmatic payoff every time. Sometimes it's just a conversation. Sometimes the act of citizenship is engaging with love with someone that you disagree. And if not because you come to agreement, but because maybe you opened up a little door in their brain that wasn't there before. And you connected over and had like sort of a spiritual moment or an emotional moment or some sort of moment together over your shared stake in this country or your state or your community or your school or your congregation. And I think that that's, we need more of that. We really need more of that.
I think that's really helpful. I just started thinking, like, I wonder how many people like haven't changed their opinion on anything in like the last, I don't know, year or something. Like, I feel like if you're not willing to enter into a conversation with others and receive feedback, like, how could you expect others to take what you're saying with any grain of truth, right? Like, we have to be willing to have that give and take. That's part of community, right?
Well, I don't know why we would be here to interact with one another if we weren't supposed to influence each other. If I'm the same person on the other side of Hurricane Laura, what am I doing? If I'm the same person on the other side of a global pandemic, like, what is the point of having these experiences? I just don't think we exist to be that static. And again, that doesn't mean that our principles go out the window. It just means that we are inhabiting this environment instead of kind of sitting at a bus stop waiting. Sometimes I worry that that's what faith has become, sitting at a bus stop waiting to get out of here. And why am I here if that's what I'm doing? I don't think God would put me in that seat.
Yeah, that's good. I read a tweet yesterday, actually, and this is good Twitter, but it was, the Lord's Prayer and your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It doesn't say let us escape to heaven, right? It's like bringing the kingdom down on this earth. And I think that's an important way for us to think about things.
Because let me just confess some of my real frustration. You know, this happens with my truly beloved grandmother. Well, you just don't need to be concerned with things on earth. Okay, no, please stop that. Please stop that. Because, you know, that might be a matter of life and death to your fellow citizen.
Right.
And so to blow it off because you got somewhere better to be really upsets me. And I think that as someone who, you know, suffered gun violence as a teenager and heard a lot of like, well, this is to God's glory, or this is has a bigger purpose. And this, like, it's all sort of the same thread, which is what you're upset about doesn't really matter. And what's broken in our politics is that people feel shut down and unheard. And until people start to feel heard, which means a lot of us are going to have to do some listening, I feel like we're going to remain stuck. People cannot do what you're talking about. People cannot shift and open if they have felt silenced and told that their feelings don't matter, or that men aren't supposed to feel that way, or that women aren't supposed to feel that way, or whatever the case may be. They cannot move forward. They cannot take a step. And so I've experienced this a lot when I ran for office. I would knock on doors, and because I was a safe place, it was like, oh, I get to talk politics. And people would just vomit. It was verbal diarrhea. Like, they were keeping so much inside. I knocked on their door. This was their chance. They did not know me, and they were just ready to get it off their chest. And we've all kind of stepped into political conversations like that, where you say it and you feel this like wave of rage or frustration. And you're like, where is this coming from? Well, it's coming from because people get shut down and because we've all stopped talking about it, but we're still thinking about it. And so the first chance we get, it's like, rah. And, you know, there's going to have sometimes the act of grace, the act of a person of faith is just going to be listening to that. You are not trying to change hearts and minds. You are a sounding board for your fellow citizens who feel silenced. And, you know, I think that there is a space for that, you know, but if we are always coming from a place of privilege, especially if we think God is on our side, then we think that their perspective is not valid. I mean, I had a relative I said one time to, I'm not going to argue with a Black person about what it's like to be Black. And he said, oh, I would. And I'm like, well, we need to talk about that because that's a problem.
That is a problem.
Because I don't want to hear a man tell me what it's like to be a woman in America.
Right.
And so as a white person, I'm not going to tell a Black person that they're wrong. It's really not that bad. I'm not doing that. And I'm not going to send them a YouTube video of a Black person saying that either.
Right.
Because that's silencing. That's not affirming their experiences.
Yeah.
It's saying, hush, you're crazy. What happened to you didn't really happen. You're misunderstanding. It's just gaslighting, you know, and it's like, it's pushing everybody to the brink, man.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the essence of white privilege, especially white male privilege. Me as a white male being able to say that, you know, but it is like, we think a lot of white dudes think that they can just tell everybody how they ought to feel and their experience is the same as everyone's else. And not realizing that that's just not the case.
Spoiler. It's not, it's just not,
it's not. So,
and it also doesn't mean that what you feel is invalid. Yeah. I mean, you are the resident expert on white maleness in this group. My experience of white maleness is that when you start to talk about these things, what is heard is not other perspectives matter too. And yours is limited. Of course it is, by the experience that you're having. What is heard is instead, you sit down and shut up. We're done with you.
Right.
Yep.
And that is not a call into community either. But, you know, when we have these conversations and you think, well, what does it matter anyway? I'm a citizen of heaven. I just keep thinking like Jesus came here for a reason.
Amen.
There was like a whole, I mean, you wouldn't have come to earth if earth didn't matter.
Right.
And what you saw in the life of Christ was making the table bigger. And I think that's all the discussion. We can dress up the conversation about privilege a whole bunch of different ways. It is really a conversation about why are we not constantly working to make the table bigger? And I just want us to be less threatened by that.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to a podcast. It was from, it was on Krista Tippett's podcast On Being, which is excellent. And she was interviewing, hold on, I'm going to get his name because I don't want to mess his name up. Resmaa Menakem. So I was listening to On Being with Krista Tippett. She was interviewing Resmaa Menakem. And he was talking about diversity training. And he was like, listen to what we're saying. Diverse from what? Diverse from what? What's the default? And I thought, yes. And can I add something to that? Because here's what happens. He says that, that happens. And Black people and our sisters and brothers of color hear white is the default.
Right.
Because it's more valuable. And when he says that, white people hear white is the default and it's unworthy of that. It's bad. Do you see how that, like, just you're different? And, you know, it's not that we should keep it the default because we don't want to hurt white people's feelings. But I just think sometimes when we talk about that, what people hear, it's like exactly what Beth just said. What people hear is not, we want to open that up. It's that we want to shut you out now.
Right.
And, you know, I hope and pray that people of faith can be the peacemakers, can come in and say, not because we have, let's be real, not because we have a lot of legitimacy right now because of our own mistakes, but
yeah,
please keep trying to say, hey, I don't think that's what they said. That's not what I heard as a white person. It's our, you know, it's white people's work, the white people who don't hear it like that, to reach out with love to the white people that do. It's not people of color's burden or responsibility to fix that, you know, or to let those people be heard. I'm never, ever, ever calling on people of color to make sure that the fragile white ego feels heard and affirmed. But I do think, you know, I don't want to keep shutting down. I don't want to keep running up against this wall. I told my father, who I argue with politics quite a bit, I don't want to be back here. I don't want my sons to be back here in 20 years at a racial reckoning where we're fighting over this. That's not to mean I think we can solve it, but I don't want to be back with rioting in the cities and arguments about law and order. We did that once. We tried it, y'all, and it got us right back to the same spot.
Yeah.
I want to do something different.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've been reading a lot of like 60s history lately, like about the Black Panther Party and even the Manson families tied up in all that. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, we are. I mean, law, like the words law and order coming out of people's mouths, just like Nixon, you know, I mean, it's just like,
I mean, don't y'all remember how that ended? It was not a good ending.
No, it's not good. Yeah. And I think to this point as well, most people, when they talk about theology, talk about white theology and don't label it white theology. So if you've never learned theology or Bible from a person of color, then you only know white theology and white biblical interpretation. So I think that's a very important point to all this. So,
and again, what an insult to God's creation.
Amen. It is. Yeah. Yeah. You can't have unity without diversity, right? So good. Okay. I want to be cognizant of the time, y'all. Can you just maybe give us, like, if somebody's not listening to your podcast, which is a travesty, how is the best way to sort of like find y'all?
Well, you can listen to Pantsuit Politics anywhere you listen to podcasts. So just search for Pantsuit Politics and you'll find us. You can go to our website, pantsuitpoliticsshow.com. We have an email newsletter that we'll send to your inbox everything that we've made that week. And so we're hard to miss if you're looking for us.
Yeah. And y'all don't mess around. That's a lot of content y'all put out. It is incredible. So
there's a lot happening in the world that we got to work our way through.
Well, thanks for stepping into that. I love the work, y'all. And thanks for the conversation. It was so great to connect. I love it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Sarah and Beth, and I hope this just like sort of pushed you down the road of how you could engage in the political system going on right now and the why behind it. I really encourage you to check out what they got going on. There is so much content. There are news updates. There is so much going on with Pantsuit Politics, and I think it's really important. I pushed this episode up so that we could have it before the election and before the real madness approaches us. So make sure you're following along, checking them out, and this is a great time to go to the bottom of your iTunes app. You can leave a rating and review there, and that just helps get the word out about A Theology of Hustle. Just helps people know what's going on, that people are actually listening to the podcast. So I greatly appreciate that, and until next time, get out there and hustle.